수대바야
엄마가그렇게다시대하나Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam. Canto 8, Chapter 22. And Bali Maharaj surrenders his life. So, So what we'll do is we'll okay. We'll read the summary chapter. So you've got your book there. Yep. Can you read loudly that summary chapter of text number 22? That's good. Yeah.
Bali Maharaj surrenders his life. The summary of this 22nd chapter is as follows. The Supreme Personality of Godhead was pleased by the behavior of Bali Maharaj. Thus the Lord placed him on the planet Sutala, and thereafter, bestowing benedictions upon him, the Lord agreed to become his doorman. Bali Maharaj was extremely truthful. Being unable to keep his promise, he was very much afraid, for he knew that one who has deviated from truthfulness is insignificant in the eyes of society. An exalted person can suffer the consequences of hellish life, but he is very much afraid of being defamed for deviation from the truth. Bali Maharaj agreed with great pleasure to accept the punishment awarded him by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Bali Maharaj's dynasty, there were many asuras who, because of their enmity toward Vishnu, had achieved a destination more exalted than that of many mystic yogis. Bali Maharaj specifically remembered the determination of Prahlad Maharaj in devotional service. Considering all these points, he decided to give his head in charity as the place for Vishnu's third step. Bali Maharaj also considered how great personalities give up their family relationships and material possessions to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Indeed, they sometimes even sacrifice their lives for the satisfaction of the Lord, just to become His personal servants. Accordingly, by following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas and devotees, Bali Maharaj perceived himself successful. While Bali Maharaj, having been arrested by the ropes of Varuna, was offering prayers to the Lord, his grandfather Prahlad Maharaj appeared there and described how the Supreme Personality of Godhead had delivered Bali Maharaj by taking his possessions in a tricky way. While Prahlad Maharaj was present, Lord Brahma and Bali's wife Vindhyavali described the supremacy of the Supreme Lord. Since Bali Maharaj had given everything to the Lord, they prayed for his release. The Lord then described how a non-devotee's possession of wealth is a danger, whereas a devotee's opulence is a benediction from the Lord. Then, being pleased with Bali Maharaj, the Supreme Lord offered his disc to protect Bali Maharaj and promised to remain with him.
Thank you. Okay. Text number one. Sukadeva Goswami said, O King, although the Supreme Personality of Godhead was superficially seen to have acted mischievously toward Bali Maharaj, Bali Maharaj was fixed in his determination, considering himself not to have fulfilled his promise. He spoke as follows. Bala Maharaj said, O best Personality of Godhead, most worshipful for all the demigods, if you think that my promise has become false, I shall certainly rectify matters to make it truthful. I cannot allow my promise to be false. Please therefore place your third lotus feet footstep upon my head. Purport. Bali Maharaj could understand the pretense of Lord Vamanadeva, who had taken the side of the demigods and come before him as a beggar. Although the Lord's purpose was to cheat him, Bali Maharaj took pleasure in understanding how the Lord will cheat his devotee to glorify the devotee's position. It is said that God is good, and this is a fact. Whether he cheats or rewards, he is always good. Bali Maharaj therefore addressed him as Uttama Shloka, your lordship. He said, you are always praised with the best of selected verses. On behalf of the demigods, you disguise yourself to cheat me, saying that you wanted only 3 paces of land, but later you expanded your body to such an extent that with 2 footsteps you covered the entire universe. Because you were working on behalf of your devotees, you do not regard this as cheating. Never mind. I cannot be considered a devotee. Nonetheless, because although you are the husband of the goddess of fortune, you have come to me to beg, I must satisfy you to the best of my ability. So please do not think that I wanted to cheat you. I must fulfill my promise. I still have 1 possession, my body. You've taken my wealth, but still I have my body. When I place my body for your satisfaction, please put your 3rd step on my head. Since the Lord had covered the entire universe with 2 steps, one might ask how Bali Maharaj's head could be sufficient for his 3rd step. Bali Maharaj, however, thought that the possessor of wealth must be greater than the possession. Therefore, although the Lord had taken all his possessions, the head of Bali Maharaj, the possessor, would provide adequate place for the Lord's 3rd step. So, as we can see here, that Bali Maharaj, and this is where we can see these things very difficult. You know, even as devotees, we're studying these sections of the pastimes of the Lord and trying to understand them ourselves as devotees. We've discussed previously that the non-devotees, it's not possible for them to understand the position of the devotees, what to speak of the Lord in their pastimes. And we see here, though, that Bali Maharaj, as Prabhupada says, although the Lord's purpose was to cheat him, Bali Maharaj took pleasure in understanding how the Lord will cheat his devotee to glorify the devotee's position. So he's actually he's understanding so well, he's taking pleasure in it. And of course, his understanding is, that sense of renunciation, that's full knowledge. As Prabhupada says, it's one thing to understand I'm not this body and everything belongs to God. But full knowledge is when one is fully detached in all one's activities. And so this is full knowledge being exhibited by Bali Maharaj, and where he is quite willingly, happily, lovingly detaching himself from everything for the pleasure. He can see that that's the Lord's purpose, and he's taking pleasure. If that's what the Lord wants me to do, then that's my offering. He's taking pleasure of, and it also, because it's it's a playful sort of pastime with Lord Vamanadeva, that here's someone who's given you so much in charity, and then you're being bound and treated like they're a rascal. So very, very humorous. He's, as we've said, the whole appearance is Lord Vamanadeva. a dwarf brahmachari, son of a brahmana. You know, it's about as harmless as you can get. Someone you'd never think that they're going to cheat you, and but he cheated him big time. So, you know, the whole pastime is very is very pleasurable. So Bala Maharaj's understanding is there. And this is when one renders service to the Lord, or even desires to render service to the Lord, then that causeless knowledge is there. The Lord actually enlightens one in the heart. In fact, Prabhupada was giving a lecture in the Bhagavad Gita 1966 in New York, and he was saying, he says, you'll be surprised where this knowledge comes from if you just simply serve the Lord. He says, it's magic. It's magic. You don't know where it's come from, you know, this knowledge. So, text 3. I do not fear being deprived of all my possessions, living in hellish life, being arrested for poverty by the ropes of Varuna, or being punished by you as much as I fear defamation. Purport. Although Bala Maharaj fully surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he could not tolerate being defamed for cheating a brahmana brahmachari. Being quite alert in regard to his reputation, he thought deeply about how to prevent being defamed. The Lord therefore gave him good counsel to prevent defamation by offering his head. A Vaishnava does not fear any punishment. Narayana para savena kutaschina bibhiti. Bhagavatam 6:17:28. And of course, you know, it'd be a similar circumstance here that, of course, you know, to cheat Brahmana Brahmachari is one thing. When that Brahmana Brahmachari happens to be the Lord himself, you know, then, you know, to cheat that person is, you know, shows a very miserly heart. You know, Lord Bhumadev, he's understood that Lord Bhumadev is very kind to have presented him an opportunity to serve him. And he's understanding that, you know, that's the great friendship of the Lord. In a similar way, Arjun, you know, Krishna said to Arjun when he was explaining that, you know, what will people think of you, you know, for one who's been honoured, dishonour is worse than death. And actually, Prabhupada puts it like this. He says, Arjun, I'm your friend, Krishna. Everyone knows me as the personality of Godhead. For you to refuse to, I've brought you to the battlefield to fight. For you to not do your duty, standing here with your friend, you know as a person of God, everyone knows it, better you die. Dishonor is worth, better you die. Is that Prabhupada puts it? You know, to dishonor your friend like that, you know, to dishonor, because it would also be dishonor, you know, here Vamanadeva would dishonor Lord Vamanadeva's appearance as well, as Arjuna would have dishonoured Krishna. You know, Krishna's actually, you know, appeared there as his chariot driver, as Arjuna's chariot driver. So the Lord's taken such a show of friendship. You know, I'll be there on the battlefield with you, Arjuna. Oh, I don't care about that, I'm going. You know, so, you know, Bali Maharaj is, you know, in a similar position, that to dishonor Lord Vamanadeva, you know, that you know, as a Brahmana Brahmachari, you know, the whole thing would be for, as you know, when Lord Vamanadeva appeared, you know, he glorified the dynasty of Bali Maharaj. You know, all of them. Oh, they all become famous, you know, Hiranyakashipu and this one and that one, all become famous for their, you know, chivalrous, charitable, you know, never backed away from a challenge, you know, the true Kshatriya spirit, never, you know, ran in fear. You know, Prabhupada tells the story of the Kshatriya, especially for a Kshatriya. If someone makes a request, they must take up the challenge, whether it's charity. You know, someone, the woman asks, you be my husband, or someone asks to fight. Prabhupada tells the story of, I think he said it was about 300 years ago. It may have been a Muslim ruler, but he came back from the battlefield and he knocked on the palace doors. The king has returned. He was a king. Tell my queen I am here. So then the queen understood, oh, the king, he's returned from the battlefield, he's alive. Ask him what his name is. He says, he went and asked, oh yes, I'm King Sajjah. Say, oh, it's your husband. No, it's an imposter. My husband went to war. He has either fought and died, but, you know, they will never leave the battlefield. If the war is continuing, you know, they will never leave the battlefield. They will either die on that battlefield or go to heaven and go to heaven. Or they will conquer. If he's come home and conquered, that's okay. But if they've not conquered and still he's come home, he's not my husband. That's an impossible. She wouldn't let him in. Such is the Kshatriya spirit, you know, like that. So, you know, so for Bali Maharaj, you know, it would be an abominable situation, you know, in light of the glory of all the Kshatriyas in his family. And to perform such a low act in the presence of the Lord, who's come there in a very friendly manner to accept service from him, that would, you know, be very, that would be the worst of all. You know, to do that, to not reciprocate with the Brahmana, Brahmachari, but to, you know, the Lord who's appeared in that form would be very bad. So, although a father, mother, brother, or friend may sometimes punish one as a well-wisher, they never punish their subordinate like this. But because you are the most worshipable Lord, I regard the punishment you have given me as most exalted. Purport. Punishment meted out by the Supreme Personality of Godhead is accepted by the devotee as the greatest mercy. And Srila Prabhupada quotes that verse from Bhagavatam 10:14:8. One who seeks your compassion and thus tolerates all kinds of adverse conditions due to the karma of his past deeds, who engages always in your devotional service with his mind, words and body, and who always offers obeisances to you, is certainly a bona fide candidate for liberation. A devotee knows that so-called punishment by the Supreme Personality of Godhead is only his favour to correct his devotee and bring him to the right path. Therefore, the punishment awarded by the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be compared to even the greatest benefit awarded by one's material father, mother, brother, or friend. And, Srila Prabhupada would many times point out that, you know, this is the nature of a devotee, that if something untoward happens to them, they consider this is the Lord's mercy, who's very kind. He's correcting me, and reducing. I should be suffering so much according to the karma of my past deeds, but I'm just getting a little of it just for my benefit. And he's always engaging in the devotional service to the Lord because he understands if there's anything good that's happening in my life, it's because of the mercy of the Lord. And the non-devotee, they think differently. They think that if anything bad happens to me, it must be then, you know, God is unmerciful, he's unjust, there is no God, God is dead. But as soon as there's something good that happens, oh yes, I've worked so hard, this is my, you know, I've done so well, these are my good qualities, you know, I've got a good team behind me, you know. We've all done well. And, the opposite. So you see that quite often with other demons. Bali Maharaj is, showing the qualities of a devotee, although he's born in a demon family, but other demons, you know, there was blame others. So, since your lordship is indirectly the greatest well-wisher of us demons, you act for our best welfare by posing as if our enemy. Because demons like us always aspire for a position of false prestige, by chastising us, you give us the eyes by which to see the right path. So he can, you know, clearly understand. This is a good lesson. Purport, Bali Maharaj considered the Supreme Personality of Godhead a better friend to the demons than the demigods. In the material world, the more one gets material possessions, the more he becomes blind to spiritual life. The demigods are devotees of the Lord for the sake of material possessions. But although the demons apparently do not have the Supreme Personality of Godhead on their side, he always acts as their well-wisher by depriving them of their positions of false prestige. By false prestige, one is misguided, so the Supreme Lord takes away their position of false prestige as a special favour. Translation. Many demons who are continuously inimical toward you finally achieve the perfection of great mystic yogis. Your lordship can perform one work to serve many purposes. And consequently, although you have punished me in many ways, I do not feel ashamed of having been arrested by the ropes of Varuna, nor do I feel aggrieved. Report. Bali Maharaj appreciated the Lord's mercy not only upon him but upon many other demons. Because this mercy is liberally distributed, the Supreme Lord is called all-merciful. Bali Maharaj was indeed a fully surrendered devotee, but even some demons who were not at all devotees but merely enemies of the Lord attained the same exalted position achieved by many mystic yogis. Thus Bali Maharaj could understand that the Lord had some hidden purpose in punishing him. Consequently, he was neither unhappy nor ashamed because of the awkward position in which he had been put by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. My grandfather, Prahlad Maharaj, is famous, being recognized by all your devotees. Although harassed in many ways by his father, Hiranyakasipu, he still remained faithful, taking shelter at your lotus feet. A pure devotee like Prahlad Maharaj, although harassed circumstantially in many ways, never gives up the shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead to take shelter of anyone else. A pure devotee never complains against the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A vivid example is Prahlad Maharaj. Examining the life of Prahlad Maharaj, we can see how severely he was harassed by his own father, Hiranyakasipu, yet he did not divert his attention from the Lord even to the smallest extent. Bali Maharaj, following in the footsteps of his grandfather Prahlad Maharaj, remained fixed in his devotion to the Lord despite the Lord's having punished him. So, of course, Prahlad Maharaj was preaching and he began preaching and practicing devotional service, and of course, as soon as he did, such a big nightmare, you know, ensued. And if I had a dollar for every time I've heard from devotees, you know, sort of beginning Krishna consciousness, I started chanting Hare Krishna and so many problems, you know, I didn't have all those problems before. Have you heard that? Yeah. And you know, sometimes the Lord's, you know, testing a devotee, and but you know, one girl said that to me. I did an astrology chart, and she was having so much problem, and she was practically suicidal. And so, you know, I took it very seriously, the chart, and I asked her to chant Hare Krishna, and I gave her a little hope for the future in the chart, but especially through Krishna consciousness. And you know, she was especially going a little bit broke because she couldn't get a job, and she was sort of expecting, well, I'll chant Hare Krishna, all of a sudden I'll get a job and, you know, my debts will disappear. But, you know, she just couldn't get the job, and so it was like still the weight was coming down. And so she quoted to me something some guru had once said to her, I don't know who he was, that, you know, sometimes, you know, the Lord gives us so many problems, you know, in order to, you know, for us to, you know, appreciate something. And I said, no. I said, the Lord doesn't give us any problems at all. As Madhvacharya says, we're a treasure house of problems and miseries. Right, we're you know, from our past life, we're like a treasure house. There's so many miseries and problems coming our way. Here we are in Kali Yuga, still in Kali Yuga. You can only imagine what we've done over the last 400 or 500 years in Kali Yuga. You know, the amount, right? And we're thinking, oh, God's given me problems. Right? We have so much problems we've created for ourselves. And I said, you know, I quoted this verse in the Bhagavad Gita. Actually, we're just getting, even the problems are coming, we're still getting just a little pinch of it compared to, you know, what we have. And sometimes, actually, what Krishna does is, you know, to intensify, so that we actually go back to Godhead in this lifetime, thousands and thousands of lifetimes, he might just reduce to just a little intensity for a couple of months. You get through that and you save yourself thousands of lifetimes. You go back to God in this life. You know, he's being very merciful. So there may be a little intensity, but he has some plan. Okay, you get through a couple of months, you'll be okay. So, of course, so, you know, once, therefore, it really tests our understanding of God. When he does that, we have to think, you know, I've got all these gurus have told me this about God and what he does. And then the Gita is saying that, so now I really got to think about, you know, that. Do I keep faith in these gurus? Do I have to accept the Gita? You know, which one? So I really test their faith, and, you know, to the point where they're really going to have to make some choices. Okay, look, I'm going to have to forget these other so many gurus and, you know, follow Krishna and the Gita and like that. So, you know, it forces them in a situation. But there's so many reasons why Krishna does things, but he doesn't give us problems. That's why we call him Hari. You know, his very name is one who takes away your miseries. That's Hari. So he's not giving us any problems. You know, And of course, someone like Prahlad Maharaj, then, you know, he also wasn't given problems. You know, the Lord chose him to be part of that pastime because of his, you know, qualifications as a pure devotee of the Lord, to glorify him. Yeah. So he followed in the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj. What is the use of the material body, which automatically leaves its owner at the end of life? And what is the use of one's family members who are actually plunderers, taking away money that is useful for the service of the Lord in spiritual opulence? What is the use of a wife? She is only the source of increasing material conditions. And what is the use of family, home, country and community? Attachment for them merely wastes the valuable energy of one's lifetime. So, now, here, and we know that Bali Maharaj is famous for surrendering everything to the personality of Godhead. So, here we see this quoted now, this in the purport, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna advises, Sarvadamam parityagya yajya. Mamikam Sharanam Braja. Give up all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. So here now we've got this theme of surrender coming in, the explanation of what Bali Maharaj is doing. The common man does not appreciate such a statement by the Supreme Personality of Godhead because he thinks that during his lifetime his family, society, country, body and relatives are everything. Why should he give? Why should one give up any one of them and take shelter of the Lord? But from the behaviour of great personalities like Prahlad and Bali, we understand that surrendering to the Lord is the right action for an intelligent person. Prahlad took shelter of Vishnu against the will of his father. Similarly, Bali took shelter of Vamanadeva against the will of his spiritual master. And all the leading demons. People may be surprised that devotees like Prahlad and Bali could seek shelter on the side of the enemy, giving up the natural affinity for family, hearth and home. In this connection, Bali Maharaj explains that the body, which is the centre of all material activities, is also a foreign element. Even though we want to keep the body fit and helpful to our activities, the body cannot continue eternally. So that's an interesting concept there, isn't it? You know, the body, it's not natural. It's actually a foreign thing. You know, usually something, you know, foreign we wonder, well, what is this foreign thing that has attached itself to me? And, you know, if it's a source of problems, we just connect ourselves with it. And it cannot continue eternally. Although I am the soul, which is eternal, after using the body for some time, I have to accept another. Unless I render some service with the body for advancement in devotional service. One should not use the body for any other purpose. One must know that if he uses the body for any other purpose, he is simply wasting time, for as soon as the time is ripe, the soul will automatically leave the body. This particular theme, as we're describing here, it is central to the Gita, and it is what every single devotee, no matter what type of devotional service or, you know, where they're situated, every devotee will have to consider this particular line of thought. So, and which leads one to the surrendering process. So, you know, and as we see, as you're reading through this, you can also imagine Arjuna in the same position and so many devotees. That we're interested in society, friendship and love, but what are they? So then, you know, it describes that, you know, friends and relatives merely plunder hard-earned money of the bewildered soul. You know, the wife expands the material condition. You know, if a person lives without a wife, his material conditions are less extensive, like this. And but human life is meant for self-realization, not for increasing unwanted things. Actually, a wife increases unwanted things. One's lifetime, one's home and everything else one has, if not properly used in the service of the Lord, are all sources of material conditions of perpetual suffering under the threefold miseries. Unfortunately, there is no institution in human society for education on this subject. People are kept in darkness about the goal of life, and thus there is continuous struggle for existence. We speak of survival of the fittest, but no one survives. For no one is free under material conditions. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura says that there is no anomaly in this world greater than that of having possessions, being the proprietor of possessions which are not used in the service of Krishna. There is no anomaly greater than having possessions which are not used in the service of Krishna. Very, very strong, which again, it's at the heart of this, you know, that. And that includes, you know, possessions or attachments, you know, wife, children, home, you know, bank balance, like that. Basically, all of those things. You know, when I do the mundan, I like to have a little joke with the parents. They're just falling in love with their first baby. And well, what is the meaning, Pandit, of this hair cutting? Oh, little baby's going to practice detachment. And a baby doesn't have many possessions, so you're going to give up. Or they're going to give up the hair. You know, that's their 100% contribution. And then I'll say to them, of course, at the end, you know what we have to give up. And they all look, and it sort of starts. Wife, husband, children, home, wealth. And they go, everything. You know, we have to surrender everything. Give it if we want to, you know, surrender attachment, everything. So, and then they understood. So I say to them, so best practice from this age. So, you know, when we get to the end of our life, anything we're attached to will make us take so many births. My spiritual master says that, you know, there's like a, you can look at it like a hidden price tag. Or, you know, this would look good to be attached to, and then you look at it and think, oh, maybe three births to enjoy that. And you look at something else, oh, that could be 100 births to enjoy that, you know. And when you sort of look at it in that sense, you think, how many births do I have to take to try and enjoy that material attachment in this world, you know? And so then you think, oh, it's just not worth it. No, it has no value. So it's not going to make me happy. It's really useless. It's going to cause a lot of trouble. So what are these things that, you know, just the source of so many problems? So therefore, Bali Maharaj is saying like that. You know, attachment for them, it just wastes the valuable energy of life. So now Krishna says, Savadamam Parit Yagya Mamikam Saranam Braja, give up all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. All varieties of religion, as Krishna says in the Gita, are basically based upon the three modes of material nature, are attached to things in goodness, passion, ignorance. You know, we want to be, there are C-class prisoners in the material world, B-class, or A-class prisoners. But after all, they're prisoners. And all the religious principles are meant to be, to help you to either become an A-class, B-class, or C-class prisoner in the material world. You know, they're not to get you out of there, but to increase your attachments, sattvic attachments, raja, you know, tamasic attachments. So he says, give them up. Give all those types of religions up. You have no attachments, except, you know, what is the pleasure of the Lord? Whatever is the pleasure of the Lord, that I'm attached to, for his pleasure, otherwise no other attachment. So therefore, you know, you see here, this is the beginning. You know, when we talk of surrender, there's a process, a thought process. All these things must be there. There's no question of surrender or full surrender when this knowledge is not there. See, all knowledge, all transcendental knowledge manifests as detachment. And if the knowledge is not there, the detachment will not be there. So when we serve Krishna, they both come. The knowledge, and from the knowledge, then the detachment. If this level of knowledge is there, as Bali Maharaj is thinking, what use are all my attachments in this world? What a waste of time, what a waste of energy, you know, and they're just keeping me in the cycle of birth. If that beginning is there, then one cannot claim to be surrendered. One can pretend to be surrendered. You know, people, you know, you have that saying, go with the flow. I've even heard devotees say, as one in New Zealand says it a lot, you probably know, go with the flow. Go with the flow. You know, is that the flow of the sattvic, rajas, tamas? You know, it's almost like, you know, hippies, pseudo-religionists, they go with the flow. It's almost like, I'm going with the Supreme. I'm surrendered to the Supreme. I'm going with the Supreme, like that. So they feel that they're surrendered in this loving serenity with the Supreme. Until they understand the Supreme is Krishna, and he says, yes, but you're flowing in the wrong direction with your attachments. Now, if you want to flow towards me, you have to give up all those things. Oh, okay. I think I'll find another god like that. You see? So there's no question, you know, there's a lot of false surrender. A lot of false surrender. This knowledge is not there, the surrender is not there. You know, even as devotees, you know, we can say that. Yes, I, you know. You know, one of my favorite ones, sometimes devotees come up to me, especially, you know, younger ones, the first 2 hours. They'll say, oh, you know, Prabhu, I'm your surrendered servant. And I think, oh, yeah. you've been a devotee for a couple of months and you're surrendered. That's not, you know, how does that work? So I ask them to do something, and they don't do it. They're like, someone else, where they feel that they'll be a little bit popular by catering to that person, will say, oh, so-and-so, and they'll just forget that I've asked them to do something that I need to do for their ceremony, and they'll wander off to someone else who seems a bit more popular, and they'll just run around doing all sorts of things. And I think, where's the Prabhu on your surrender servant? You know? So, yeah. So this is surrender. So we're bringing in this process, this concept of surrender and knowledge. So you see how, you know, for us, you know, Prabhupada starts his purport with Sarvadhamma Parikshita. Yeah, we think, where did he get this from? You know, where's that coming from? I don't. My grandfather, the best of all men, who achieved unlimited knowledge and who was worshipable for everyone, was afraid of the common men in this world, being fully convinced of the substantiality afforded by shelter at your lotus feet. He took shelter of your lotus feet against the will of his father and demoniac friends who were killed by your own self. Only by providence, so he didn't want to associate with materialistic persons, Prahlad Maharaj. Only by providence have I been forcibly brought under your lotus feet and deprived of all my opulence. Because of the illusion created by temporary opulence, people in general who live under material conditions, facing accidental death at every moment, do not understand that this life is temporary. Only by providence have I been saved from that condition. And, you know, a couple of times, you know, my wife has, you know, sometimes some very senior devotees in our spiritual master ask, you know, how are you going, how's your health, because they know that she's got the secondary breast cancer. And, and she'll say, you know, so I'm, you know, making, you know, preparations, you know, for death. And I say, everyone's doing that. You know, we're all doing that. Like all the devotees are doing it. All the devotees are doing it. Like that. Well, they should be, you know. So that's senior devotees think like that. Yeah, we're doing that all the time. Death can come at any moment. You don't need any... you know, killer disease or anything. You know, we can't guarantee the next 3 seconds. It was it was a Gaur Govinda Maharaj. He left his body in Vrindavan, Mayapur, while giving Bhagavatam class. Yeah. I could die in the next 3 seconds, like Gaur Govinda Maharaj. So you know, you can't guarantee. You know. So one who thinks like that, you know, don't waste time, your consciousness, everything absorbed in these temporary things. You die at any moment, and Bali Maharaj has been saved from that condition. Okay, now I don't have anything to think about. The Lord's taken it all off me. Yeah, so... So he appreciated the actions of the Supreme Lord, although all the members of the demoniac families, except Prahlad and Bali, considered Vishnu their eternal traditional enemy. Uh, as described by Bali, Lord Vishnu is actually not the enemy of the family, but the best friend of the family. The principle of this friendship has already been stated. That Yashaham Anugranami Hadishya Taddanam Shanai. The Lord bestows special favour upon his devotee by taking away all his material opulences. So Bala Maharaj said, it is to bring me to the right platform of eternal life that you have put me into these circumstances. And Prabhupada says here, you know, as indicated by Bali, every devotee in Krishna consciousness should always be afraid of the common man engaged in pursuing material prosperity. Such a person is described as pramatta, a madman chasing the will of the wisp. With no certainty of what kind of body he will receive next. Those who are completely established in Krishna consciousness and who therefore understand the aim of life will never take the activities of the materialistic dog race. But if a sincere devotee somehow does fall down, the Lord corrects him and saves him from gliding down to the darkest region of hellish life. So, you know, one time Srila Prabhupada was asked, you know, to comment on, you know, the materialistic rat race. And Prabhupada said, oh, I don't know anything about rat race. But I know about dogs, hogs, cows, and that's it. You know, he started to describe. So here he calls it a dog race. Because it's not mentioned in the Shastra, a rat race, properly speaking, it's a dog race. So unless it's in Shastra, Prabhupada doesn't want to know it. You know, he's not interested in the, you know, the materialistic sayings of, you know, nor their thoughts, nor their sayings. Other activities, he doesn't want any bar of it. Yeah. So, the materialistic way of life is nothing but the repeated chewing of that which has already been chewed. Although there is no profit in such a life, people are enamored of it because of the uncontrolled senses. Now, that's interesting. There's no profit, there's no benefit, there's no happiness. So, why do they do it? Because they're mad. With uncontrolled senses, like dogs, you know, dogs chasing their tail or chasing each other. And because of uncontrolled senses, they fully engage in sinful activities by which they get a body full of suffering. Bala Maharaj appreciated how the Lord had saved him from such a bewildered life of ignorance. He therefore said that his intelligence had been stunned. Stabdamati nabhujate. He could not understand how the Supreme Personality of Godhead favours his devotees by forcibly stopping their materialistic activities. So this is this mood of surrender. Sukadeva Goswami said, I best to the Kurus, while Bala Maharaj was describing his fortunate position in this way, the most dear devotee of the Lord, Prahlad Maharaj, appeared there like the moon rising in the night time. Then Bali Maharaj saw his grandfather, Prahlad Maharaj, the most fortunate personality, whose dark body resembled black ointment for the eyes. His tall, elegant figure was dressed in yellow garments. He had long arms, and his beautiful eyes were like the petals of a lotus. He was very dear and pleasing to everyone. Being bound by the ropes of Varuna, Bali Maharaj could not offer befitting respect to Prahlad Maharaj as he had before. Rather, he simply offered respectful obeisances with his head, his eyes being inundated with tears and his face lowered in shame. Purport. Since Bali Maharaj had been arrested by Lord Bhamadadev, he was certainly to be considered an offender. Bali Maharaj seriously felt that he was an offender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Certainly Prahlad Maharaj would not like this. Therefore Bali Maharaj was ashamed and hung his head. And therefore, You know, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he approached his spiritual master, his spiritual master considered him a fool, and therefore that he was unfit for the study of Vedanta as a Vedanta, you know, the impersonalist, to, but that he should simply chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and, you know, engage in devotional service, which he did. So, you know, the mood of the disciple is that if the spiritual master says that I am a fool, then I am a fool. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he took that. The spiritual master has considered I am a fool, therefore I am a fool, and therefore I will pursue this course of only chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And of course, that instruction, now Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of course, was a great scholar and a pundit. And everyone should understand, if he's not fit to study Vedanta, then who am I? Similarly, Arjun, he said, I am not fit to follow this process of yoga that you have given, and the Lord accepted, yes, you are not fit. You simply attach your mind to me. If Arjun is not fit to follow that yoga, then who is? In Kali Yuga. And, you know, Prabhupada also, you know, his spiritual master, you know, requested him, you know, to preach in the, you know, the English-speaking world, and Srila Prabhupada, you know, he took that up. And, you know, sometimes when he was in India, he went to speak in the Indian languages, and then he even, you know, he would say, I'll speak Hindi or Bengali, whatever. And then he remembered that his spiritual master had asked him, no, you preach in English. And so even there, so he would stop himself. No, I will preach in English. I've been asked to preach in English. I'll preach in English. Many of the things that Prabhupada did, it was in that same frame of mind that my spiritual master considers me qualified to do this but not that, and therefore this is what I would do. Like that. So you know, you can see this here also in Bali Maharaj. We see also Jiva Goswami. Rupa Goswami instructed him because, you know, he challenged the Digvijaya who tried to defeat, you know, wanted to defeat Sanatana and Rupa. And they just signed a letter, yes, you know, we don't want to waste our time. So, yes, you've defeated us, you're the best scholar, now go away, we'll go back to our service. Jiva Goswami didn't want his spiritual masters to be considered lower than such a rascal, and so he defeated him. And then Rupa Goswami, you are not fit to reside in Vrindavan. There's no place in Vrindavan for such envy. And so he accepted. Yes, I am unfit. He didn't protest. I am unfit. Even though he'd actually acted on their behalf, and he left, and he, you know, lived in very austere conditions for about a year until, you know, Sanatana indicated for Rupa Goswami, perhaps he could come back now, sort of thing. So, but, you know, one time when Prabhupada was at Radha Damodar Temple, one of the very elevated devotees there from another sampradaya, but they said, you know, I can't understand that pastime, you know, why Jiva Goswami was chastising, you know, so strongly. Prabhupada explained that he accepted that chastisement. He said that Rupa was not actually chastising Jiva. He was chastising us. The instruction is meant for us. You know. Jiva accepted that instruction on our behalf. And then, so here, Bali Maharaj liked that. You know, to accept that position that, yes, I am rascal. So, you know, if Bali Maharaj, who surrendered everything to the Lord, including his head, and if the Lord says you're a rascal, then who are we to challenge when we're called a rascal? You know, quite often people will call me a rascal, and I will tell them, well, when have I ever said I'm not? So, you know, they don't do anything falsely. You know, it's not being done falsely. They actually consider that, you know, that they are a rascal. So they understand there's a pastime there and they're facilitating that pastime of the Lord. And at the same time, you know, I guess Bali Maharaj, you know, would reflect on all the times he's tried to take over the heavenly planets, and you know, seize the heavenly planets for himself, and you know, foster his ambitions and what have you. And he's reflecting on that and considering that, you know, maybe I have, maybe I should hang my head in shame. When the great personality Prahlad saw that the Supreme Lord was sitting there, surrounded and worshipped by his intimate associates like Sunanda, he was overwhelmed with tears of jubilation. Approaching the Lord and falling to the ground, he offered obeisance to the Lord with his head. Prahlad Maharaj said, "My Lord, it is your Lordship who gave this Bali very great opulence of the post of heavenly king, and now today it is you who have taken it all away. I think you have acted with equal beauty in both ways. Because his exalted position as king of heaven was putting him in the darkness of ignorance, you have done him a very merciful favour by taking away all his opulence." Yes, and so here we see that 1088.8 again quoted, "It is by the mercy of the Lord that one gets all material opulence, but if such material opulence causes one to become puffed up and forget the process of self-realization, the Lord certainly takes all the opulence away. The Lord bestows mercy upon his devotee by helping him find out his constitutional position. For that purpose, the Lord is always ready to help the devotee in every way. But material opulence is sometimes dangerous because it diverts one's attention to false prestige by giving one the impression that he is the owner and master of everything he surveys. Or actually, this is not the fact. To protect the devotee from such a misunderstanding, the Lord, showing special mercy, sometimes takes away his material possessions." And here he says, to protect the devotee from such a misunderstanding. So sometimes by the mercy of the Lord, because it's not their karma, but sometimes the Lord, out of his mercy, not out of karma, will offer opulence. We know that Bali Maharaj certainly had, he admired Prahlad Maharaj all along, and admired his pure-hearted devotional character and heart. So sometimes material opulence is given. The danger is that our attention goes to this false prestige, that somehow one is the owner and master of everything. We saw, way back, Bali Maharaj was preaching, we quoted that verse in the Bhagavad Gita, it was 247, that one should never, you have the right to perform your prescribed duty. You are not entitled to be the fruits of your activity. We're not the proprietor of everything. So here, Bali Maharaj, the Lord's given something, and now the Lord's taken everything off him. So when was he the proprietor? Because it can be given or taken. So therefore it all belongs to the person who can give and take. But we have the right to perform our duty, but we're not the proprietor of the results of that duty. Never consider yourself to be the cause of your activity. So, that means that, I have done such wonderful things as a devotee. I have opened so many temples. I've done, distributed so many books. I've brought, great advertisement for the Hare Krishna movement. I've done this and I've done that. Seeing oneself as the cause, Prabhupada says that seeing oneself as the cause, that happens as soon as we attach ourselves to the result. Oh, I have done this. I see that in these activities, there's some nice prestige for me to be enjoyed in these activities. Right? There's some prestige. So many things, and there's a real opportunity for some prestige. And that prestige will bring facility and so many other perks and nepotism and so many things. So there's the result. There's one result of the activity. The result is that Krishna consciousness is being spread for Krishna's pleasure. But there's another material result that, we see, here is something, another result, there's some prestige, and I'm attaching myself to that. Now, as soon as we attach ourselves to that, we somehow connect ourselves as the cause and therefore the rightful owner of that enjoyable object. Okay? So, therefore, Krishna says, never consider yourself to be the cause. As soon as you consider yourself to be the cause, you feel you're entitled to the result. So never feel yourself to be the cause. Because actually the result is not yours. You do your duty for the pleasure of the Supreme. But then you may say, like Arjun, if I can't, consider the result of this battle of Kurukshetra, either it's good or harm, is something that is for my pleasure. it gives me pleasure to avoid this, or gives me pleasure to accept the result one way or another, then I won't work. No, you can't attach yourself to the result and consider yourself to be the cause and therefore the rightful enjoyer of that. But that doesn't mean you can't do your duty. Never be attached to not doing your duty. Just because you there's no prestige, you see that with devotees. When the services, they'll attach themselves where there's a certain amount of prestige, facility, comfort. You know, it's a calculation. You can see the cash register eyes coming in. I can walk through the courtyard, because I'm in a hurry, trying to, do ceremonies. I can be loaded up and stuff balancing, because I've got to get it all back into the shoulder because it's either going to rain or because if I leave it there, the pigeons are going to get into everything. So I try and, get it. And I can walk through it. And I can see people walking up as if they're going to ask me, and then they see someone and they think, oh, if I chat with this other senior devotee, I sort of get some brownie points from hanging around with, such and such a, popular devotee or big devotee. So they literally just go over and chat to someone. They're coming towards you, they're going to grab something, gone. And you can just see the prestige. It's more prestigious to talk to this big devotee than actually help this rascal, to carry that stuff. Although you can see that he's elderly and struggling. I've seen. So, so many different things. Or, this one. This is another one. You can be sitting, they're serving Bhishadam. You got nothing on your plate, nothing. You're looking, and they're they're serving all the big devotees around you. Your little devotees, you got nothing, and you think, okay, they've served them. They're all been eating for 10-15 minutes, right? The plates are overflowing. I've still got this empty plate, and there's nothing. There's nothing in it for them to put a little subject there. They'll go to one of those. Anything more? No. Anything more? Anything, a little spoon of subject, just a couple of potatoes, nothing. There's no prestige in it. So there's, many different things, where devotees will, literally, they hone in on a spotlight situation. So, Bali Maharaj understand, he's accepting this chastisement because this is the nature of demons. And I think my wife, she come home from the retreat up at the farm, and she was saying how, something I quote a lot as well, that, there's a little bit of kumsa in everyone. Burijan Prabhu, I think, was saying a little bit of kumsa in everyone. I always say that as well. And, there's a little demon in all of us. Bali Maharaj knows that. He's accepting this instruction on our behalf, that if he's prepared to hang his head down in shame, to be chastised, so in other words, in Bali Maharaj's, heart, he's happy that he only wants to serve the Lord, and he doesn't want any to attach his mind. I've given the Lord everything. No one has ever given more charity than me. But I'm not going to attach my mind to any of that. I don't want to do business as Pallad. Pallad didn't want to do any business with the Lord. I'd rather hang my head. I'm a rascal, even the thought that would come into my head, I'd be a rascal for even allowing that thought to come to my head. So, he's exhibiting this quality of pure-hearted surrender and not attaching himself to, although he's done such wonderful activities in devotional service, by hanging his head in shame as a rascal, he's showing us that one should never, ever attach oneself to the prestige of our devotional service, or the opulence that sometimes Krishna gives, or the position that sometimes Krishna gives in our devotional service. We should never ever do that. And that's what we're, that's the example, the nice example we're getting here from Prahlad Maharaj. So if he can do that, then how can we dare to, you know, protest against the Lord? Mm. Any questions or comments on that? Material opulence is so bewildering that it makes even a learned, self-controlled man forget to search for the goal of self-realization. Wow. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, the Lord of the universe, can see everything by his will. Therefore, I offer my respectful obeisances unto him. And of course, that being puffed up is his word by Prabhupada. Puffed up. Puffed up by false prestige of possessing material opulence, he certainly neglects the goal of self-realization. And of course, you know, material opulence also means, you know, subtle opulence like position, fame, as well as money, you know, an open checkbook. And, you know, he says because of scientific improvements in material opulence, people have entirely given up the path of self-realization. Practically no one is interested in God, one's relationship with God, or how one should act. They're mad for material possessions. If this kind of civilization continues, the time will come when the Supreme Personality of Godhead will take away all the material opulences. Then people will come to their senses. Dire warning there. And of course, sometimes we see that with, you know, big devotees that sometimes their position, their opulence, everything is taken away by Krishna because you know, they attach themselves, that they are, their will, you know, their position is extremely important above so many other considerations of Prabhupada. I remember one time there was one guru in Mayapur. I was there. It was Hamsaduta Maharaj. You know Hamsaduta? Yeah. Hamsaduta was one of the original 12. And, you know, some of his followers, I think some of them got into a bit of crime as well, you know, in order to bring in a few Sankirtan dollars. But anyway, mostly they distributed books. Mostly. Very big book distributors. And they just wanted to do that. There was a lot of paraphernalia sales going on in the world. And especially, you know, places like Australia and whatever, with so many paintings and so many things. And it was very difficult in many parts of the world to sell books. And it was diminishing a little bit. And he said, this is like in the temple room, you know, all the other gurus are there and sannyasis, and he said, if we don't just do book distribution, you know, not all this other ways of collecting money, I will not return here to Mayapur. Like a protest. I remember him saying that. And I thought to myself, I was a young devotee, I was a brahmachari. I thought, there's a little bit of self-importance in that, you know, sort of just, I know you're an important person, but, you know, Prabhupada wanted everyone to come, you know, despite, you know, some political arguments, they can be discussed and what have you, but to sort of make such an ultimatum and as if everything is going to stop because you don't come, you know, it just sounded to me like, you know, there was someone who was, you know, really feeling themselves to be the real cause of all the good things that are happening in ISKCON. And from memory, that was the last year he ever came back, because he literally fell down from his position. Basically, I think he ended up getting excommunicated. You know? So Krista says, oh, okay. You know, maybe we'd take your ability, you know, to come back to Mayapur off you. You know, actually, when we go to the Dham, Krishna gives us an invitation to come, and he allows us to come back. That's also, you know, we're able to do that. I remember speaking to Murari, who was a very famous Madanga player, and he used to teach the Gurukul kids way, way back. I don't know if he's still, he'd be very old if he's still alive now. I said to him, you know, oh, you should come to the West, you know, you're such a wonderful kirtaniya. Is it Krishna willing? He must have had hundreds, but he understood. I don't know that he ever went, but he understood. You know, if Krishna arranges, I can go, and if he doesn't, I'll never go. And, you know, he understood. So, you know, this, you know, that demand, you know, oh, this doesn't happen, I won't come back. Well, you know, you're not the one getting yourself there. It's Krishna bringing you there. So this... even amongst devotees, we have to be very careful of the attaching yourself to the result for prestige, opulence, or what have you.
When we say if Krishna arranges, but at the same time we have to put some effort towards that, correct?
Yeah, you can put the effort in. You can put the effort in, but if Krishna doesn't, we understand if, you know, like Arjun. You know, we're an instrument. We put the effort in like this, that we try to become a, you know, a very good instrument in the hands of the Lord. That's our effort. keeping yourself very purified so that we're tuned into Krishna's will, and that if Krishna wants us to do something, we've prepared. You know? If, you know, so for every devotee, if someone says, oh, can you do the kirtan? They should be prepared. Yes, I can do the kirtan. You know. Every devotee basically should be able to, you know, 1, 2, 3, play the kartals as 1, 2, 3, and, you know, say the prayers and chant Hare Krishna if they're asked to. Can you just give a little talk to these people? Can you explain this to these people? You know, this verse in the Gita. So, you know, a devotee tries to, as Prabhupada says, a devotee is, they're expert at many, many things. They're very good at many, many things. But, you know, there's one thing they have a particular expertise, generally. According to their nature, but devotees should be capable of, you know, the spiritual masters do this, they, okay, I'll just go ahead and do it somehow or another. You know, they're basically, you know, spiritual masters here, whatever he wants me to do, I'll try and do it. If he asks me and I need to do it, you know, if I can delegate to someone better, fine. But if there's no one there, everything he wants to do, I will try and do it like that. And, you know, try and... So to try and be a good instrument, you know, in the hands of the Lord, that's what we do. But actually, we're just an instrument, and therefore the result is actually in Krishna's hands. And in preaching, you know, Prabhupada said in some of his lectures, he said, we preach to someone, and that's it, you know. We're not attached to the result. You preach nicely, the rest is up to Krishna. We just, you know, go on to our next service. You know, we've done what we can. We don't become attached. So Sukadeva Goswami continued, O King Parikit, Lord Brahma then began to speak to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Within the hearing of Prahlad Maharaj, who stood nearby with folded hands. But Bali Maharaj's chaste wife, afraid and aggrieved at seeing her husband arrested, immediately offered obeisances to Lord Vamanadeva, Upendra. She folded her hands and spoke as follows. Although Lord Brahma was speaking, he had to stop for a while because Bali Maharaj's wife, Vindyavali, who was very agitated and afraid, wanted to say something. So Lord Brahma begins to speak, and she's just interrupts. I know my wife did that. When I was attacked in this temple, she spoke to some of the senior devotees. But this would never have happened if you had to listen to him and stuff like that. And she copped it for that. She was very, despite who people were, she was just going to speak her mind like that, you know, to see me in my condition. And she's very... She was agitated in her heart, but spoke very softly, just pointing out something that needed to be said. But but that's also, you know, this is also the Lord's arrangement that no one will admonish or, you know, see a fault in a woman doing this, and therefore, you know, sometimes some strong words can be said by a woman by the arrangement of the Lord, and yet no one should really, you know, strongly censure that woman. You know, sometimes a child says something that just, you know, needs to be said, and no one will admonish them. Sri Vindyavali said, O my Lord, you have created the entire universe for the enjoyment of your personal pastimes, but foolish, unintelligent men have claimed proprietorship for material enjoyment. Certainly they are shameless agnostics. Falsely claiming proprietorship, they think that they can give charity and enjoy. In such a condition, what good can they do for you, who are the independent creator, maintainer, and annihilator of this universe? Before, Bali Maharaj's wife, who was most intelligent, supported the arrest of her husband and accused him of having no intelligence because he had claimed proprietorship of the property of the Lord. So here she speaking against her husband. Such a claim is a sign of demoniac life. Although the demigods who are officials appointed by the Lord for management are attached to materialistic enjoyment, they never claim to be proprietors of the universe, for they know the actual proprietor of everything is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the qualification of the demigod. But the demons, instead of accepting the exclusive proprietorship of the Supreme Lord, claim the property of the universe for themselves through demarcations of nationalism. This is part of mine, and that is part of your, that part is yours, they say. This part I can give in charity, and this part I can keep for my enjoyment. These are all demoniac conceptions. This is described in the Bhagavad Gita. So Bala Maharaj's wife accused Bala Maharaj by saying that although the Supreme Lord had arrested him, showing him extraordinary mercy, and although Bali was offering his body to the Supreme Lord for the Lord's third step, he was still in the darkness of ignorance. Actually, the body did not belong to him. But because of his long-standing demoniac mentality, he could not understand this. He thought that since he had been defamed for his inability to fulfill his promise of charity, and since the body belonged to him, he would free himself from defamation by offering his body. Actually, however, the body does not belong to anyone but the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by whom the body is given, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 1861. The Lord is situated in the core of everyone's heart, and according to the material desires of the living entity, the Lord offers a particular type of machine, the body, through the agency of the material energy. So under the circumstances, how could Bali claim that the body belonged to him? Thus, Vindhyavali, Bali's intelligent wife, prayed that her husband be released by the Lord's causeless mercy. Otherwise, Bali Maharaj was nothing but a shameless demon, specifically described as a foolish person claiming proprietorship over the property of the Supreme Person. And of course, Prabhupada describes in Kali Yuga the number of such shameless men has increased. Yeah. Scientists, philosophers, politicians, like that. and they've plunged the affairs of the world into mismanagement. There is a great need for the Krishna consciousness movement for the benefit of innocent people who are being carried away by the propaganda of such demons. So, Vindhyavali, very intelligent, she's saying, may her husband be released by the Lord's causeless mercy. He's just a foolish person. Otherwise, Bali was nothing but a shameless demon. So there's a ploy here to get Bali Maharaj released. Lord Nityananda was saying to Lord Chaitanya, you don't kill these two brothers, Jagga and Madai. If you kill them, you have to kill everyone. But they're as good as dead anyway. Why would you kill people? In Kali Yuga, they're all shameless. They're as good as dead. There's nothing to their existence. There's no point in killing people already dead. They're already rock bottom. There's nothing to punish someone whose life is already so wretched before. So Lord Brahma said, O well-wisher and master of all living entities, O worshipful deity of all the demigods, O all-pervading personality of Godhead, now this man has been sufficiently punished, for you have taken everything. Now you can release him. He does not deserve to be punished more. Purport. When Lord Brahma saw that Prahlad Maharaj and Vindhyavali had already approached the Lord to ask mercy for Bali Maharaj, he joined them and recommended Bali Maharaj's release on the grounds of worldly calculations. So Bali Maharaj has also said that, you know, you've taken everything. You've acted very mercifully, very nicely by taking everything away for him. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Lord Brahma, because of material opulence, a foolish person becomes dull-witted and mad. Thus he has no respect for anyone within the three worlds and defies even my authority. To such a person I show special favour by first taking away all his possessions." Oh, did I skip? Which one? Where did I go? 22? Yeah, okay, 22, sorry about that. Bali Maharaj had already offered everything to your lordship. Without hesitation, he has offered his land, the planets, or whatever else he earned by his pious activities, including even his own body. By offering even water, newly grown grass, or flower buds at your lotus feet, those who maintain no mental duplicity can achieve the most exalted position within the spiritual world. This Bali Maharaj, without duplicity, has now offered everything in the three worlds. How then can he deserve to suffer from arrest? Yeah, and here Prabhupada quotes his verse 926, that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is so kind that if an unsophisticated person with devotion and without duplicity offers at the lotus feet of the Lord a little water, a flower, a fruit or a leaf, the Lord accepts it. Then the devotee is promoted to Vaikuntha, the spiritual world. Brahma drew the Lord's attention to this subject and requested that he release Bali Maharaj, who was suffering, being bound by the ropes of Varuna, and who had already given everything, including the three worlds and whatever he possessed. So you see the importance of this verse in the Bhagavad Gita, that this, just like it said that devotional service begins with the tongue. You know, if you control the tongue, you control all the other. You know, we serve the Lord by eating prasad. We use the tongue in the service of the Lord by eating prasad. So we offer food to the Lord and eat that prasad, and we chant the glories of the Lord. So devotional service begins with the tongue. Here, this verse also, Patram Pushpam, Pram Toyam. This devotional service, you know, begins with this sort of concept that, you know, the Lord is saying, you know, worship me. You know, be my devotee. You're worshipping so many others, you're offering so many things. He says, but what am I asking? So you want to know what I'm asking? I'm saying do some devotional service. What am I asking? With devotion, you know, without duplicity, a leaf, a fruit, water, a flower. Universally available all over the world, all over the universe. And if someone follows that path, they understand, you know, they understand, I'm eating every day, the eating process is not going to stop. You know, I offer some things which are easily available, not even costing me anything, to the Lord, devotion. And if I want, I can eat that prasadam. So there's no loss at all. Every day I have to eat. There's no loss of time. It's not as if I have to change all my activities. It doesn't cost me any money. It's universal. It's very easy. But the Lord saying he will accept it, and therefore I will have a loving connection with the Lord and go back to Godhead if I do that. That is the kindness of the Lord, and really we're not really doing much at all. If one follows that, then basically, of course, the end result, it means that, I heard Prabhupada explain this, basically we're doing so much work and our whole consciousness then switches that I'm doing all this work and I'm keeping this house where I keep my picture of Krishna, or, you know, Jagannath or Chaitanya. I look after the house because I have Krishna there, and every day I offer Krishna, you know, a leaf, a fruit, a water, like that, something like that, in that house. So I look after that house. And all my work goes to looking after the house, and I have the Lord in my house, like that. Or I look after the Lord's temple, because that process goes on. Basically, from that one verse, actually, it ties in everything that you do in life. Everything, you know, from that. So again, you know, devotional service begins with the tongue. And here, you know, Krishna says, devotional service, you know, what am I asking you to do? You make a little offering like that. And then everything else that you're doing actually ties in as devotional service. In everything you're doing, you're thinking of Krishna, and it ties in. Yes, every day I say to my wife, because every day she cooks, you know, she cooks for the deities. You know, we have, you know, 40 shalagrams, govardhan, dwarka, and, you know, we have Radha Krishna, Radha Shamashundra, etc. And, someone said to her the other day, what do you do at home all day? You know, what do you do all day? And my wife was telling me what she said, and I said, you should just say you cook for the deities every day. And they'll go, really? Because, you know, there's it's a big thing. And like, you know, the other day, because we have so many different fruit trees. So she got the quinces. It took her about 2 or 3 hours. She made these, like, you make a jelly and like a paste. And so she offered it, you know, to the deities. And then, and she brought some here also to offer. I think Madhu Manjari also made some nice preparations with these quinces, you know, they cook up really nice. And, but, you know, you can see that someone who does that every day, they just, you know, they know that everything they do centres around offering the Lord that little bit of food, with a, you know, just a little kirtan with it like that. It centralises their whole life. Everything they do in the garden, cleaning the house, paying the bills, keeping the children, you know, orderly, education, the whole thing ties in with that little offering like that. So it's a very, very important verse. So, and if one does that, you know, just that simple activity, one can be promoted to Vaikuntha, you know. One can go back to the spiritual world. But I always think, you know, if one understands Krishna, and that person is eligible to go. One, you know, and they understand. Here I'm offering something to the person I've got it. And Prabhupada says, he doesn't just reach his hand out and take the offering. He says he eats it. You know? There's not a, you know, they sometimes when, you know, little children make little mud pies for mum and dad to eat. And you think, oh, yum, yum, yum. But you don't really eat it, you know. And Krishna's thinking, oh, yum, yum, yum. No, he says he takes it and he eats it. Like that. He actually eats it. He accepts it. He says accepts it means he eats it. So, and when God's eating the food that you're cooking, you can go back to God. Yeah. So, so therefore they're saying, you know, people can go back to Vaikuntha, and here, look what Bali Maharaj has done. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Lord Brahma, because of material opulence, a foolish person becomes dull-witted and mad. Thus, he has no respect for anyone within the three worlds and defies even my authority. To such a person, I show special favour by first taking away all his possessions." So we've read that one. So now I'm going backwards and forwards. While rotating in the cycle of birth, just to keep you guessing, while rotating in the cycle of birth and death again and again in different species, because of his own fruitive activities, the dependent living entity, by good fortune, may happen to become a human being. This human birth is very rarely attained. If a human being is born in an aristocratic family or a high status of life, if he performs wonderful activities, if he is youthful, if he has personal beauty, a good education and wealth, and if he is nonetheless not proud of his opulences, it is to be understood that he is especially favoured by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. See, you know, these are the results of piety. Good birth, high birth, beautiful appearance and keeping that youthfulness and beauty. Good education and wealth. And there's a fifth one mentioned. He's able to perform, you know, very meritorious activities. These are called opulences. You know, a person can be puffed up with these opulences. Opulence doesn't just mean money and, you know, buildings and gold. Beauty is an opulence. performing wonderful activities by which one becomes, well known to many people. That's an opulence, to be able to do that. But if they don't become proud, you know, Krishna is the ability man. It is to be understood that he is especially favoured by the person of Godhead. This means that he is fully aware that all his opulences are due to the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He therefore engages all his possessions in the service of the Lord. If one lives perfectly in such Krishna consciousness, it is to be understood that he is especially favoured by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The conclusion is that one's being deprived of his wealth is not to be considered the special mercy of the Lord. If one continues in his opulent position, but does not become unnecessarily proud, falsely thinking that he is the proprietor of everything, this is the Lord's special mercy. Very interesting, because as I mentioned this the other day in Srimad Bhagavatam class, people quite often quote this verse that when the Lord becomes merciful, you know, he quite often takes everything away. And a lot of devotees are like, oh my God, my goodness, you know. And, I'm not sure, you know, how much mercy I want, whether I want to advance past this point. But actually, there's a lot more to this statement when it's properly understood. Prabhupada explains it in different ways. Here also, that there's better mercy if you get to keep it because you're not proud. And he gives you so much opulence and so much, you know, opportunity. Like Prabhupada, he took everything away. That was Prabhupada's mercy, Krishna's mercy. But because Prabhupada was so dear, you know, as Prabhupada said, for a pure devotee, that's his first installment, or that's superficial. Or he does that first. But actually, the full-blown manifestation of his mercy comes, when he gets everything back. From here we see that Lord Vamanadeva achieves, you know, an unrivaled position that even rivals the demigods in heaven. And in the next, Manvantara, he actually becomes Indra. So, but there is no, false prestige as he previously had. And that, to be in that position, to have that unrivaled opulence within the mature universe, in all respects, and the Lord always maintaining his friendship and association, that is the full manifestation of special mercy. But sometimes, devotees also don't understand, there's another aspect to this, that sometimes devotees feel, if I have, gained so much opulence, in other words, by being a devotee, so much opulence has come into the community, into the temple, there's land, there's farms, there's restaurants, there's so much opulence like that. And I myself live in nice facility, drive nice cars, have big office, big position, travel all over the world, so many different things like that. If there's pride, then the special mercy of the Lord is not necessarily there. If there's pride. And this, you see this whole section here where Bali Maharaj, doesn't want to accept any self-aggrandizement for his giving in charity and getting that mercy of Lord Vamanadeva. So, the aspect of pride, see, sometimes... Lord, it's explained that Lord Nityananda in the Chaitanya Charitamrita and Gaura Kishore Das Babaji explains this. Because so many persons would sometimes come and associate with a good, sincere devotee and just disturb them. But trying to get their association, because that association, they then travel... Oh, I'm an association of such and such a great Maharaj. Oh, really? So then, they can open a temple, they can get money coming in and so many different things. They get so much prestige because, yes, I'm with, sort of name dropping, people, even in ISKCON, people like to do that, I'm friend with such and such a Maharaj and such and such, we're like this, And... he said that sometimes when people like that, but they're actually a disturbing influence, what Lord Nityananda does is he gives them the fame and the prestige and the opulence there so that they leave the nice devotees alone. They then go off and indulge, they go off and indulge in their the things that they feel that they have... I've got all these things. And it's employed by Lord Nityananda. Because there's that proud pride there. That's the difference. They've also been given opulence by Lord Nityananda. The blessings of the Lord. But it's to go away. It's to, you preoccupy yourself with this. And therefore the sincere devotees don't have to bother so much with your association. You've got so many important things to do with all your opulences and false prestige and so many things like this. So that pride is, an interesting factor. But you do see that sometimes there are devotees in our movement who sort of chase services and situations and all sort of flitter here and there around the world or around the country. whatever like that. You know, and it's the where there's some prestige, and you know, especially now we have Facebook, you know, a lot of Facebook coverage and so many different things, you know, so that they can become very attracted to that sort of thing. But for devotees who, you know, when you've got very important service, like Śrīla Prabhupāda, you know, very, very serious about his devotional service. And, you know, he associated with his disciples and personalities who were really going to facilitate, you know, satisfying the Acharya, Śrīla Bhaktisiddhanta, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He gave his time, his association with them. He wasn't that interested in giving his time, you know, for those who just wanted to literally make a show in one sense that, yes, oh yes, I'm real, you know, I spend a lot of time with Prabhupada, we do this and that, and I went here and there. He wasn't so much availed to giving himself like that, wasting time. So, very interesting. Although aristocratic birth, yep, and another one here. Now, I can't remember exactly where I've seen it, but it may be in here. You know, in the Bhagavad Gita, it says that one who has performed yoga, you know, long, long time, they take birth in the family, aristocratic persons. Now, I saw quite one time in the Bhagavad Gita, I trying to find. No, it's in the purport, yeah. If you ever find that verse and where it is, but Prabhupada says it's actually even more special mercy when one takes a birth like in a destitute type family situation where one has no recourse whatsoever except to take to devotional service. He says that that's actually a better favour of the Lord. Because sometimes, you know, sometimes devotees think in this way. You know, you see the little children, you know, and quite often the children being born in Krishna consciousness, they're born in opulent families, and, you know, there's a lot of the Indian families also well-to-do, you know, because they're very dutiful, so they earn a lot of money. And, you know, or they're born in the family of devotees and what have you. But we see a lot that there's a huge proportion that don't take advantage of that. And but I used to think, you know, that I must have done nothing at all in my past life to have taken such a birth in the family of just, you know, this demoniac type family, impoverished, and just. It's like, you know, there's nothing in the Gita about that, you know, just like demons are cast down into these, you know, situations. And then, you know, when I saw that, I could understand that that can be the special mercy. Because as far as I understand, that Rupa Goswami says in the Nectar Devotion, one cannot perform devotional service in this life unless he's performed devotional service in a previous life. And generally, when devotees come, if they really take to devotional service very quickly and naturally, usually, you know, and solidly and steadily for a long time, they just take off. You can see they're just taken off from perhaps they've done it before in their past life and they're taken off. Devotees that may come along and they're struggling to understand even the basics for a long time and they sort of, you know, won't commit and what have you, then it means that, you know, perhaps there's less, you know, from a past life. So I was trying to reconcile, you know, how was it that somehow the first time a devotee ever asked me, come to the temple, I just came to the temple and joined and never left. You know, which sort of, to me, indicate, I always, you know, it's like I was, always knew I was looking for something, and to me, when I found it, I just went, bang, that's it, what I was looking for all my life, always felt I was looking. So I felt that there was something, you know, from past life, but then I couldn't reconcile, you know, then, you know, you didn't take birth in even an aristocratic family or a devotee family, or, you know. So, you know, it explains like that. So we have to be a little careful, therefore, the point being that sometimes we see people born in very, you know, not those conditions in the Gita, and we may just write them off. That, you know, this person's not born in an aristocratic family, this person's not born in a devotee family, this person, you know, there's nothing, there's no background of piety anywhere in this person's birth. Oh, obviously, you know, they're just a sinful wretch, and that's how they've ended up in that position. They're a sinful wretch. Yeah, like that. So we have to be a little careful that actually, in fact, that can be sometimes the special mercy of the Lord, that the person has no other option. Which is another example of this verse where Krishna takes everything off you, which means that you don't even get a good birth in your next life. So one may be a devotee, see, and then because, you know, there's attachments to enjoying, somehow Krishna takes everything off you, so you don't even get a good birth. There's no opulence, there's no beauty, there's no knowledge, no education, no devotion of family, but you've got some attraction to Krishna consciousness from a previous life, and that's all you've got. Life is not offering anything else. Then, you know, Krishna again gives you back. So that's another example of that. So it may not happen in one lifetime. He may do it in the next life, take everything off you, so you start with nothing. Okay, now, now here, it describes in this purport, devotees like Dhruva, who is given unlimited material opulences. Right, he lives on the polestar, which is like Vaikuntha practically. Have the special mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Once Kavera wanted to give Dhruva Maharaj a benediction, but although Dhruva Maharaj could have asked him for any amount of material opulence, he instead begged Kavera that he might continue his devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When a devotee is fixed in his devotional service, there is no need for the Lord to deprive him of his material opulences. The Supreme Personality of Godhead never takes away material opulences achieved because of devotional service, although he sometimes takes away opulences achieved by pious activities. That's interesting. He does this to make a devotee prideless or put him in a better position in devotional service. If a special devotee is meant for preaching but does not give up his family life or material opulences to take to the service of the Lord surely takes away his material opulences and establishes him in devotional service. Thus, the pure devotee becomes fully engaged in propagating Krishna consciousness. That's another interesting twist to that, isn't it? He never takes away material opulences achieved because of devotional service. But he sometimes takes away opulences achieved by pious activities. Mm. Yeah. Did you have a question? Or? No, I'm just... Yeah. What's that? It's Nirmala. I thought it was a garden gnome. I saw the little hat under the, I could hardly recognise it. I need my other glasses. I've got my reading glasses. It's gone.
So next line.
Yeah.
It is contradicting that from a devotee is not taking.
Yeah.
And they say that nothing is taken from a devotee, but from a wise person. Everything is taken from Prabhupada.
Yes. Here, Prabhupada is saying in the purport that he doesn't, if the Lord gives you something as a result of your devotional service, he doesn't take that off you. But if you have some material opulences coming your way, he may take that off you. Yeah, as a result, the material opulences, he says the material opulences... by pious activities. Mm.
Here it's clear. So there are two categories. One is opulence by pious activities.
Yep.
And opulence by devotional service.
Yeah.
The opulence by devotional service is not taken away.
Mm.
The opulence by pious activities is taken away.
Mm.
And then special condition, the next statement for God makes it, I think, in applying to Prabhupada himself.
Yes.
Special devotee is meant for preaching, but does not give up his family life and material opulences. To take to the service of the Lord, then the Lord surely takes away his material opulences and establishes him in devotional service.
Mm. So for instance, let's take Prabhupada's wife and children and home. Although he's trying to engage them in devotional service, generally the wife and children are not engaging in devotional service. So, in a sense, there are things which Prabhupada is trying to engage in Krishna service, but somehow it's not possible to engage those things, so they keep their material quality. Not through Prabhupada's fault. So, therefore, the family and home are taken away from Prabhupada. We call them material opulences. His business, all of those things. Now, then Prabhupada begins preaching Krishna consciousness, and he is awarded a spiritual family. So Prabhupada, when he was in London and different places in the world, he would say that, you know, I had, my mother, my father, you know, a few children. Now I have hundreds and hundreds of mothers, hundreds and hundreds of fathers. They're all treating Prabhupada like a mother would, like a, you know, father, just looking after his every need. Like he would look at his disciples, that they're treating him in the same way, you know, a parent would look after their little children. Everything that they want, just always looking after, never asking for anything, just... Even like that, and so many children, he would say, so many spiritual children. So, he considered he had, some. In essence, Krishna swapped some material opulences but they weren't material in the sense that Prabhupada, in this case, had gained them through piety because he's a Nitya Siddha. In his case, it's a little special again because they're material in the sense that they wouldn't engage in devotional service. So they're keeping the material quality against Prabhupada's will. So he took those material opulences away and gave Prabhupada the spiritual opulences, spiritual family, so many children, so many mothers, so many fathers, so many homes. He said, I have homes all over the world. Like that. So that was never taken off him. That just increased throughout the course of his life. So Prabhupada's a little different because he doesn't really fit into the category of someone who has material opulences as just by performing pious activities in his past life. You know, if he was somewhere, you know, in this world in a past life, preparing for his this life as a preacher, as far as he said, in my past life I was sinless, you know, or something, and a physician or something. There was some reference he made. But whatever whatever material opulence he has means that there are things that somehow or another, against his will, he can't engage in Krishna services. And therefore, he shouldn't have attachment to them. Because Prabhupada did main attachment to them, not for material purposes, but there was attachment to them, rather than the, you know, attachment to the life of the sannyas. You know, because Prabhupada was a very... naturally, you know, he was... happy to serve as a grihastha, naturally. He wasn't. But Krishna, took all those things away. And Prabhupada also, you know, he was a very competent business person and a person who could, you know, make a little money turn into great wealth, which he intended to use in Krishna's service. But that was sort of, again, his material attachment, because his spiritual master basically said, you know, print books and, you know, this, that and the other. So it's like Arjun. You know, Arjun appears to have these material attachments. Now, you know, we've discussed previously that Prabhupada said that's Mahamaya. When he's refusing to serve Krishna, Arjun, and when he is serving Krishna, it's yoga maya. He's under maya. But at the same time, if you listen to Prabhupada's, you know, the 90% of Prabhupada's discussions on Arjun refusing to serve Krishna, he says repeatedly that Arjun was playing the role. Over and over again. Which means that, you know, you do get the sense that there's such elevated devotees that they're playing the role, which means it's almost like the Mahamaya is there and they're fully experiencing that attachment. And at the same time, because they're such elevated devotees, they can sort of see, boy, you know, like, this is an attachment that shouldn't be there. And I should give it up, or somehow spiritualize it or something, you know. It's like seeing two things at once. It's like the dreamer seeing themselves dreaming and knowing, oh, I'm dreaming. You know, it's like that. You ever had that experience where you're in the dream and you know you're dreaming? Oh, this, you ever, never? Anyone? I have. You never done that? Yeah, I have to think about that. So you're in... No, you stay in your dream. You're in your dream and you know I'm dreaming. This is a dream and I'm dreaming. You go with it. You never done that? Yeah, so it's like that. And then you wake up and you remember. So, you know, for devotees on the level of Prabhupada, Bali Maharaj, it's like that. You know, the Mahamaya is there, but they're also transcending it, seeing themselves in it, you know. For instance, we saw before, we were talking about Jai Vijay. They kept their forms in Vaikuntha as the doorkeepers and expanded themselves as Hiranyakasipu. In other words, they saw themselves in that dreamlike demoniac state, but while they were demons, they were full demons. But they also had that ability to see from a transcendental position. So they're sort of, in one sense, playing the role, and at the same time, they're in the dream, you know, in the Mahamaya. So, You know, so when you talk about, you know, Prabhupada having, being attached to family and what have you, it's still, you know, for someone of his caliber of devotee, he's still able to perceive himself in that situation, in this sort of, you know, it's not quite like us as, or myself anyway, as conditioned souls. You know, there's a different level there that Krishna allows them to have, where they're almost still seeing things from a transcendental position, even while in the midst of, you know, what would be illusion, or, you know, like Arjun, you know, in the midst of illusion, he's still Arjun, you know. And, you know, there's just that sense of being able to oversee what he's doing at the same time being in the thick of it, you know. And therefore Prabhupada often says, he says straight out, it was Mahamaya, and he says more often, 90% of the time, he was playing the role. Which when you play, when you say that, means as a person who's aware of what they're doing. You know? So it's like a person in a play, perhaps, you know, and there's a very sad separation, you know, from someone, and, you know, perhaps their wife is playing the part of the girlfriend that they get separated from, and then there's a separation, she dies, and they cry like that. Because, you know, how terrible it would be to lose that person. And they know I'm in a play, but they're actually, you know, overcome with those emotions, fully, 100%. It's not an act. They're literally lost in that emotion. Like that. So, you know, it's a little bit of that. That was interesting. So, but I'm saying that because when we talk about Prabhupada's attachments, please don't quote me that Prabhupada had all these material attachments, you know. He always remained a person who was a nityasiddha as well, playing a role in one sense, and yet deeply absorbed in that role at the same time, fully.
Bhaktivinoda Thakur also, his life shows a progression of somebody who was having inclination for impersonalism.
Yeah,
so,
that's right. Exactly, yeah. And there's, you know, there's always that sense for such a person. And therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, Krishna says that those transcendentalists who take, you know, they're very elevated. Now, whether they take a birth in a transcendental family, or, as we said, they're taking a birth in a, you know, real, you know, bottom of the heap like me, that there's always a sense that, you know, they're automatically not attracted to just ritualistic things without any real transcendental purpose, taste, knowledge, realization, you know. There's somehow empty. Now, what I'm looking for, it's not there. That's empty, you know. That's empty, you know. Even while they're in it, there's, you know, they get, but no, that's not it. I'll move through it gradually. I remember when I read the Gita, the first time I read the Gita, I was so intoxicated, I don't know how I could walk. I was staggering and I was stoned. And when I read the Gita, and my eyes were wandering over the preface, and I was thinking, this is it, this is what I've been looking for all my life. And I could barely read it. And I'm thinking, I said, this is it. This is what I've been looking for all my life, you know? And I knew it as soon as I saw it. I could recognize it, you know? And still, I was so intoxicated like that. And from that moment, the first time I set my eyes on the Gita and just even read in that state, I understood, this is the book, this is the knowledge I've been looking for, this is the person. And yet I was fully intoxicated. So, yeah, interesting. All right, look, we've only got about 5 or 6 verses to do. Let's just do that. You got a bit of a cold, Nirmala. You've been out in the garden too long. Yeah. See, this family of troopers. We saw Sweater over here the other week. She also, you know, had a bit. But so attracted to him in the Bhagavatam. That's the sort of devotee I like. So, Bali Maharaj has become the most famous among the demons and non-believers. Have I skipped anything?
No.
No, good. Bali Maharaj has become the most famous among the demons and non-believers, for in spite of being bereft of all material opulences, he is fixed in his devotional service. Well, there's a nice endorsement by the Lord himself. Although bereft of all riches, fallen from his original position, defeated and arrested by his enemies, rebuked and deserted by his relatives and friends, so his wife's laid the boot in as well, although suffering the pain of being bound and although rebuked and cursed by his spiritual master, Bali Maharaj, being fixed in his vow, did not give up his truthfulness. It was certainly with pretension that I spoke about religious principles, but he did not give up religious principles, for he is true to his word. And the purport there says, Bali Maharaj passed a severe test put before him by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and this is further proof of the Lord's mercy toward his devotee. The Lord certainly appreciates the devotee's forbearance, and it is recorded for the future glorification of the devotee. This was not an ordinary test. Hardly anyone could survive such a test. But for the future glorification of Bali Maharaj, one of the Mahajans, the Supreme Person of Godhead, not only tested him, but also gave him the strength to tolerate such adversity. The Lord is so kind to his devotee that when severely testing him, the Lord gives him the necessary strength to be tolerant and continue to remain a glorious devotee. And therefore, we sing that song, Gurudev, creep up into dear. You give me the strength to bear all trials and troubles. Because if we pray to the Guru, then the Lord will actually give that strength. The Lord continued, because of his great tolerance, I have given him a place not obtainable even by the demigods. He will become king of heaven, heavenly planets, during the reign of the Manu known as Savani. This is the mercy of the Supreme Person of Godhead. Even if the Lord takes away a devotee's material opulences, the Lord immediately offers him a position of which the demigods cannot even dream. See, that's another thing, Nirmala, that if he does take something away, the Lord will immediately, you know, it's very temporary, you know. there are many examples, and he gives different examples there. Because the Lord wanted to give Bali Maharaj the exalted position of Indra, the demigods might naturally have been envious of him and might have fought to disturb his position, but the Supreme Personality of Godhead assured Bali Maharaj that he was always remain under the Lord's protection. 32. Until Bali Maharaj achieves the position of King Indra, he shall live on the planet Sutala, which was made by Vishvakarma according to my order. Because it is especially protected by me, it is free from mental and bodily miseries, fatigue, dizziness, defeat, and all other disturbances. Bali Maharaj, you may now go live there peacefully. So we see that Vishvakarma is the engineer for the palace and architect of the palace of buildings in the heavenly planets. So this Sutala must be at least equal to those on the heavenly planets. Alright, and the first...
There's no sun there.
On the heavenly planets?
No, there's no sun.
Oh, Sutala.
There's no sun.
A further advantage of this place, at least you won't get sunburned, but... A further advantage of this place designed for Bali was that he would not be disturbed by any outward calamity. Moreover, he would not be disturbed by mental or bodily miseries, all extraordinary features of the planet Sutala. Well, even if there's no sun, there's no disturbance of any bodily or mental. So, you know, he wouldn't note it the way it was set up. It'd be just as good. In the Vedic literatures, So, O Bali Maharaj, Indrasena, now you may go to the planet Sutala, which is desired even by the demigods. Live there, peacefully, surrounded by your friends and relatives, all good fortune unto you. So, this Sutala was hundreds of times better than heaven. So again, it says here, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead deprives his devotee of material opulences, this does not mean the Lord puts him into poverty. Rather, the Lord promotes him to a higher position, with spiritual opulences. So they're sort of reaffirming he doesn't take away. He's taken away something in order to give something better. What's that?
I was thinking of that Russian devotee who was in the Guru Maharaj's
disciple. All
right. She had, she was a doctor. She had that disease, multiple sclerosis.
All right.
She could not even move.
Yeah.
And I think she, whatever little bit they did get from way of the government payment, she had saved it. Actually, when Maharaj went to see her, he thought she would be weeping about her state. She didn't weep. She just gave him the money. Maharaj would say, you keep it for yourself. He said, no, take it. Then afterwards, my voice is gone. When he was leaving out, she gave a letter. And Maharaj thought, this is going to have all her cries.
Yeah.
All she asked was, may I be able to chant?
Yeah. That's right. Very nice. Very nice. On the planet Sutala, in ISKCON, there are many nice pure devotees like that that go unnoticed. That's such an extraordinary qualification. They go unnoticed, and as I was saying, that sometimes seeking prestige, devotees will want to be seen with the big devotees, and then you've got these nice pure devotees. They miss the opportunity to sit with such a nice devotee and chant with her. And try and learn of that, selfless mood, and do a little kirtan, little service in her association. They're not interested sometimes. Unless someone's got position, or sometimes saffron, then they're not interested in the association. Because they chase prestige many times. Therefore, it's, just as the Lord is bringing, attention to Bali Maharaj, Indrajumna Swami is bringing attention to this devotee. Don't neglect such a person.
Sometimes we don't know who's, you may be disciples, but we don't know who's seeing
them. Exactly, yeah. We don't know. We don't always know. That's right, yeah. Especially because, very pure-hearted devotees don't seek attention, or service from anyone. Or facility. On the planet Sutala, not even the predominating deities of other planets, what to speak of ordinary people, will be able to conquer you. As far as the demons are concerned, if they transgress your rule, my disc will kill them. O great hero, I shall always be with you and give you protection in all respects, along with your associates and paraphernalia. Moreover, you will always be able to see me there, because there you will see me, my supreme prowess, your materialistic ideas and anxieties that have arisen from your association with the demons and Danavas will immediately be vanquished. Last purport, the Lord assured Bali Maharaj of all protection, and finally the Lord assured him of protection from the effects of bad association with the demons. Bala Maharaj certainly became an exalted devotee, but he was somewhat anxious because his association was not purely devotional. The Supreme Personality of Godhead therefore assured him that his demoniac mentality would be annihilated. In other words, by the association of devotees, the demoniac mentality is vanquished. When a demon associates with devotees, engaged in glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he gradually becomes a pure devotee. And there's another situation. You know, Prabhupada was criticized for going over and associating with all the malechas and, you know, the meat eaters and, you know, in the West. Prabhupada had no fear of that because he understood that, in the same as Bali Maharaj, if the Lord wants you to take that association, he will protect you. If the Lord insists you take that association to go and preach, do your service in there, so he will protect you. And and therefore sometimes devotees are placed in that situation by the Lord's arrangement or by the arrangement of the guru. And again, they're seen as people who may, oh, you know, you're not always in the association of, you know, the big devotees in ISKCON or what have you, so you couldn't be very important. But actually, it can be a special mercy that some, you know, people can be in the association of only the newest devotees or even the beginning devotees or, you know, just people just coming along or what have you, but they're not affected by them. You know. A special mercy. So, thank you very much. We got through that chapter there.
So, Bala Maharaj was alive at that time in Bali Maharaj. I mean, he was still on.
Yes.
He was alive.
Yeah, he was talking. Yeah, he was talking directly with him. Yeah.
So it's not that he had gone to heaven.
No.
No, he was still there.
Yeah.
So then, when he was alive, how did he allow Bali Maharaj to fight against him?
He understands the plan of the Lord. You know, he's in association with Narada Muni, who understands the plan of the Lord and so many things. Yeah.
I think even before the war, Prabhupada Maharaj comes and gives a garland.
Yeah, that's right.
So, Narada Maharaj there, Bali Maharaj's kingdom should have been something like Ramaraj or something like that.
Prahlad Maharaj is not necessarily in a rulership position at this day. He ruled for some time. I think there's a certain amount of, what was it? Some long time, 400,000 years. Prahlad ruled for 400,000 years or something like that,
36,000.
Prahlad Maharaj ruled for 36,000 years. Prahlad. So this is after Prahlad's rule.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, see, kids who are under Prahlad Maharaj, with that association, they should be exalted devotees.
Yeah, they should be, but did they become like that?
Bali was in the fold of demons, and so he didn't take it up straight away. But Prahlad was always kept a watchful eye and understood the mercy of the Lord through devotees like Narada Muni and the Lord himself and basically took each and every opportunity. Of course, we see that there was association because Bali Maharaj liked what he heard from Prahlad Maharaj and liked what he saw. So there's some association. So he's doing what he can with his grandchild, but understanding that he can only... Was Varochan a devotee? He was a demon amongst the demons, wasn't it? Varochan? Was he can? You know, you can only interfere with the parents so much. A grandparent can only interfere with the parents and all the other, you know, it was a whole different rule. So, but he, you know, it's not how you start, it's how you finish. So Prahlad's done the job. Bali Maharaj is completely surrendered, so he's obviously done everything he could, and his timing is impeccable, and he hasn't interfered where it would have, his efforts would have gone wasted. And that.
I've heard another explanation that because earlier Narasimhadev gave a promise that I will save your descendants.
Yeah.
So when he's seeing that the lineage of Prahlad Maharaj, Bali Maharaj is kind of going off track,
yeah.
So he steps in.
Yeah.
And he's personally intervening so that he fulfills the promise he gave to Prahlad Maharaj.
Yeah.
Your forefathers and anyone in your line will be protected.
Yeah.
But, well, that's one way of looking at it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right then, we'll see you next week. So I don't think there's anything on that should stop us. So, right. And I think as far as the Prahlad chapter, we've only got one chapter to go, really. And it looks like we'll go through that in about 15 minutes. So, so we'll finish that, and then there's this incarnation of the fish incarnation, which we may go through quite quickly. And if we get spare time, if we finish those couple of chapters, then as we did with the nine processes of devotional service, I can just have a little bit of a look at Bali's Atmanivedanam, understand that a little bit more. So we'll go through those chapters quickly, and we'll just finish off that, and then literally we'll finish this canto. And then what happens next, no one knows. Hare Krishna.